All right, a Tuesday edition of Locked On Warriors coming up on today's episode. This is a live mail call. Well, it's a recording of my live mail call that I did on the Locked Room app every week. Instead of the mailbag that I was doing, I'm doing something new here on the podcast, where I log on to the Locked Room app, record a live show where I field questions from listeners on the app itself, and just those typical mailbag questions that I always answer that you guys send in to Twitter at WC Goldberg or email to me at wgoldberg@bayareanewsgroup.com. Got a bunch of great ones about what Kent Bazemore's role will be this season, whether or not Kelly Oubre Jr. or Andrew Wiggins should become the Warriors' sixth man, and the Warriors' use of the DPE. It's all coming up here next.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to another mail call episode, recording this live for my Locked On Warriors podcast here on the Locked Room app. What we're going to do here, as always, is I've got a list of questions that you all sent in via Twitter and on email. You can follow me on Twitter at WC Goldberg. Email questions to, in the future, to wgoldberg@bayareanewsgroup.com. If you want to get in on this conversation, you could submit questions there, or for now, just request to speak here. Doing a little bit of a combo, a classic mailbag episode off these list of questions, and then just sort of a traditional radio call-in type deal. So if you want to talk, just take your Locked Room app, request to speak, and we will get to your question. But in the meantime, let's get to our first question. This one comes from MJ Castro on Twitter, who writes in, do you think it's a good idea to start Damian Lee to replace either Kelly Oubre Jr. or Andrew Wiggins so that one of them can come off the bench as a sixth man? This is something that I've been talking about quite a bit, and it was striking to me how much more comfortable Andrew Wiggins looked running the second unit in these first few games, and even in the preseason, than when he was playing with Steph Curry. And so I dug into the numbers, and this might be a case where the eye test and the advanced metrics don't really line up. Because the advanced metrics say that in every way, Andrew Wiggins is better when Steph Curry is playing with him. That shouldn't be surprising. Players typically play better when Steph Curry is next to them because of his spacing, etc. But what was striking to me there was that Steph Curry plays better when Andrew Wiggins is playing with him. Now, the reason for that is because Wiggins is probably the only other ball handler in that starting lineup right now, especially with Draymond Green out the way he is. So Steph needs another ball handler in that lineup with him. And look, the stats overall have not been great for the Warriors, but they have been marginally better when Wiggins and Steph are on the floor at the same time. And so I do think that once Draymond Green comes back, then we can start to look at this a little bit more. Because if you bench Wiggins for Damian Lee, Damian Lee is a really good floor spacer, but he's not a ball handler, right? He's not running offense for you. And the number one thing that the Warriors need to get with Steph is somebody that can create open shots. And we saw that in Chicago with Andrew Wiggins running that high screen and roll, getting downhill. And he found Steph Curry a couple of times for three-pointers, open threes. That's what Steph needs. But once Draymond comes back, that'll be more of his role. I think you can see Andrew Wiggins continue to do that because Draymond, as good of a playmaker as he is, he's not really getting downhill the way Wiggins did in that high pick and roll, using James Wiseman screens that way. You'll see a lot more Draymond and Steph two-man game, right? They'll be running pick and roll, pick and pop stuff for each other, which will be another staple of the offense, but so will too Wiggins running that screen and roll game. We'll see. Look, I think you can still bring a guy like Wiggins off the bench to start games and then find minutes for them later on. Again, eye test. Wiggins doesn't look comfortable at the start of these games. He starts to get comfortable later on. So maybe it would be worth, you know, bringing him off the bench once Draymond Green comes back, adding Damian Lee into that starting lineup to create some spacing. So now you have the floor spacer in Damian Lee. You've got the ball handler in Draymond Green, and he's healthy. And then you've got Steph, obviously, out there. And then you find minutes in the second and the third quarter for Wiggins to re-enter the game alongside Steph Curry, and you're still able to create some sort of partnership. But as far as Kelly Oubre is concerned, to come off the bench, I don't think whether or not he's a sixth man or a starter or whatever, none of that to me is going to fix whatever it is happening with Kelly Oubre. I mean, the dude just needs a shot to go in. He is a batter at the plate, just in a slump. And the only way to get out of a slump is to just keep shooting. And unfortunately, that's what Oubre is going to have to do. And him coming off the bench and being asked to do more. Look, Kelly Oubre has never been a playmaker. People talk about Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre kind of being redundant skill-wise. They're not. They're redundant size-wise, but that's a good redundancy to have. The more long athletic guys you have, the better. But Oubre is not a facilitator, not a playmaker at all. I mean, his assist numbers are closer to Hassan Whiteside than they are Draymond Green. Okay? And so Oubre basically is a guy who's an auxiliary part of the offense. He should be running baseline in that dunker spot, doing those sort of things. And because of that, he's got a better chance of getting out of the slump playing next to starters who demand attention and can create better looks for him than doing anything on that bench unit. I think he would just be forcing it more if he were sort of the sixth man, the Caris LeVert, the Manu Ginobili of this team. It's just not his skill set. I don't think that's how you get him out of this slump. That said, I was watching the Portland Trailblazers beat the Lakers last night. And the way that Portland uses Derek Jones Jr. starts for them at small forward. The way that they use him is exactly the way that I think the Warriors need to use Kelly Oubre. I think they figured out how to use Wiggins with this high screen and roll stuff. But they have yet to tap into what it is that gets Oubre comfortable. And what that is let Kelly Oubre stand in the corner. He can get open kickouts. He can shoot the three. Presumably, eventually, those will start going in just because of the law of averages. And if he gets closed out on, he's quick enough, he's athletic enough, he's a good enough ball handler where he could just attack that closeout, drive baseline, and dunk. And when you want to do this, you know, Draymond Green, Steph Curry lob stuff, the James Wiseman lob stuff, then Kelly Oubre can hang out in the dunker spot too. That's exactly what Portland does with Derek Jones Jr. They don't ask him to do too much. They don't ask Derek Jones Jr. to create. And the Warriors can't do that. They can't ask that of Kelly Oubre either because, again, that's just not his game. And I think once they tap into that part with Kelly Oubre essentially playing stretch four, then I think things will work out better. It'll be helpful when Draymond Green comes back because you'll have another ball handler. You won't be forced to play Juan Toscano-Anderson kind of in the corner the way they have. We anticipate that Toscano will start tonight again at power forward. He's a little bit more ball handling than Eric Paschal provided, a little bit more of a savvy screen setter, high IQ kind of smart player. That'll be helpful, but he's not a ball handler, right? And so you still need to reserve some of those locations in the corner and on the wing for guys like Toscano-Anderson, where otherwise that would be occupied by Kelly Oubre, who would thrive in that role. So we'll see. I think Draymond obviously coming back will have huge ripple effects on this group.
I've got a question coming up next about whether or not the Warriors will use a DPE on a center. But first, let's talk about Bet Online. If you're ready for some football, college football heads into the bowl season, and there are some big matchups this weekend. Plus, on New Year's Day, we've got the college football playoff, four teams, two games. If you've got an opinion, put your money down. The NFL regular season two is finishing up this weekend. The playoff picture is becoming clear. I'm hoping my Miami Dolphins get into the playoffs. They're playing the Bills. It's going to be tough. We'll see. Need a Ravens loss, need some other things to happen. But they're in control of their own destiny. I would not recommend betting on the Dolphins. Never bet with your heart. Never bet with your team. But take a look at what's going on out there. And if you've got an opinion, there's only one place that has you covered and one place that we trust. It's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use that promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. That's like winning a bet before you even place a bet with that 50% welcome bonus. Look, there's college football. There's NFL games. Basketball season is in full swing. There has never been a better time to bet on the games than right now. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Betting on the NBA doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you have listened to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get podcasts.
Let's get to this next question from Carl Chan, who writes in, will the Warriors use the DPE immediately, especially now that we have three injured players on the roster, Klay Thompson, Marquese Chris, and Alan Smolikic? No, I don't think they'll use it immediately. Look, Marquese Chris, as one coach texted me, was losing him for the season was a devastating blow. And look, he wasn't a starter. He wasn't playing particularly well, like outstanding. He wasn't amazing anybody with his play, but he's just reliable. He's a great athlete. If what you want to do is have this rim rolling center on the floor at all times with James Wiseman playing as many minutes as he was as a starter, you can have Marquese Chris come in as a backup. He's got good ball skills. He's a good playmaker. He's a good lob threat. And between those two, between Wiseman and Chris, you had maybe the most athletic center rotation in the league. Certainly the fastest. Those dudes can get down the floor. And so if you're the Warriors want to play fast, that would have been helpful. But Marquise not ruled out for the season just yet. He's going to have surgery any day now, and they'll have a better timeline after that. But definitely out for a significant portion of the season. You don't basically break your leg in two places and come back right away. So I think that I don't know that they trust Alan Smolikic at this point, and they probably shouldn't based on what we've seen, to soak up any minutes at center. But as we saw against Chicago, they'll play Eric Paschal as a small ball five. You know, you move Juan Toscano-Anderson into the starting lineup. That frees up Paschal to be a little bit more of a fluid player in the rotation. And so James Wiseman will be your starter. His minutes will continue to ramp up. We'll probably end up seeing about 30 minutes per game for him at some point this year. Kevon Looney gave them good minutes. He thrived as a screener in that game against Chicago. We'll see if he can stay consistent and string together a few good games here. And that's going to be most of your minutes at center. And then, of course, you'll have Eric Paschal, who can play small ball five. You'll have Draymond Green, who's going to have to play some small ball five in certain situations. So I don't know that I think the depth takes a hit, but you still have enough guys. You have enough bodies there where you can still do some things. Not having Marquese Chris is a tough blow for this group, but there's other ways to fill those minutes other than using the DPE on basically what? Dwayne Dedmon, Tyson Chandler. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, Dwayne Dedmon is a foul machine. He's one of these guys who I call these guys like the Luke Babbitt guys. You guys all remember Luke Babbitt, who had these great 3-point shooting percentages, but I swear to God, every time I watch Luke Babbitt, I've never seen him make a three. You know what I mean? Like, the percentages tell you that he's a good 3-point shooter, but I've never actually seen him make a three-pointer. That, to me, is Dwayne Dedmon. I don't know that I've ever seen him make a three-pointer, but the percentages are good, so he's considered a floor spacer. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But he's a foul machine. He's not great defensively. There's a reason why he's not signed to a roster right now, despite being able to, like, centers who can shoot threes are not free agents, okay? They don't just stay unsigned. Dwayne Dedmon does for a reason. I don't know that if you signed Dwayne Dedmon that he would crack this rotation immediately. And so if that's the case, then what are you doing if you signed Dwayne Dedmon? First of all, you'd have to waive Michael Mulder because he's the only non-guaranteed contract left of the group. Or you'd have to eat money. Like, wait, if you had to waive Alan Smolikic or something, or Marquese Chris, you'd have to eat their money. This team is already deep into the luxury tax. I don't know that they want to do that for a guy who may or may not crack the rotation. When you have options, like I said, in James Wiseman, Kevon Looney, Draymond Green, and Eric Paschal. So I don't think that they'll use that. I think the DPE, they want to reserve that for later in the season when somebody is available potentially on a buyout. Now, that to me would be the most interesting way, most useful application of this DPE. Just wait until March. When maybe right before the deadline, when guys are getting bought out, or right after the deadline, when guys get bought out. And then maybe you can pick up a player who could actually be useful and help you get into the playoffs. Dwayne Dedmon's not that player. So just wait. Just hang back. Hold on. If you want to talk, request to speak here on the Locked Room app, doing a mail call episode, answering all of your questions. If you want to talk to me live here, just do so. Again, request to speak here on the Locked Room app. Let's get to this next question from Sir Charles 314 on Twitter, who writes in, why isn't Bazemore playing more? Is he bad, or does the coaching staff just want an extended look at the other guys? Steve Kerr told us yesterday, Kent Bazemore is their veteran. That's what it is. I think signing Kent Bazemore at the minimum was a good signing. But Warriors fans looked too much, and I said this at the time, you were looking too much at that 25-game sample size in Sacramento where he was playing out of his mind, shooting like Klay Thompson, basically, and not at the rest of his 9-year career, which was essentially up and down at best. A couple good years in Atlanta. But he's kind of a do-nothing player. He's reliable. That's the word that's always used. It's reliable. Well, because he goes out there and he stands in the right place and he makes shots when you ask him to. And that's it. But the Warriors need players to create things. They need players who make stuff happen. I compared Kent Bazemore yesterday to basically Jacob Evans. That's what he's looked like. That's what he's looked like in the preseason. That's probably what it looks like in practice. He doesn't force the issue. And I think Kent Bazemore is a great locker room presence. And he's better than Jacob Evans. I want to get that straight. But there'll be a time when the Warriors need him. That time is not right now. Right now, Jordan Poole is making more stuff happen. Michael Mulder is making more stuff happen. Damian Lee is hitting game winners. That's not what Bazemore does. Reliable, yes. Steady, absolutely. When you get Draymond Green back, maybe there'll be a place for him because you have more people who can play make and initiate things. But Jordan Poole, I mean, the Warriors have talked about this all along. They love the work they put in the offseason. When they signed Bazemore, I wasn't sure he was better than Damian Lee. I think Damian Lee's a good player. He could play playoff minutes for you. So that's why Bazemore's not playing more. They signed him at the minimum, essentially saying, look, he's our veteran. He's the guy that's in the locker room. Every team needs a locker room veteran. That's Bazemore. Steve Kerr said his time will come, and it probably will. But he's just the veteran guy on that bench. Request to speak here on the Locker Room app if you want to join in on the conversation, taking questions for a mail call episode. Let's get to this next question from Mid-Level Exception, who writes in. In the preseason, I asked how confident you were that Steve Kerr would be able to maximize his personnel as opposed to sticking with his 15 to 19 style. You were optimistic. I was not. How are you feeling now? To me, Golden State looks like the NBA's least prepared team, all the new guys in over their heads. First of all, shout out to Mid-Level Exception. I think you ask a question on every single mailbag I do. So thank you for the content. But I think we're seeing Steve Kerr go through the growing process now. He put too much on the table for these guys initially. Right. He was asking way too much with this intricate offense, the swinging, the ball movement, the off ball screening, all of this stuff. He was demanding too much of this group too early. And look, he simplified things after the Milwaukee game, ran a bunch of high screen and roll stuff, was able to get Andrew Wiggins in rhythm, which in turn got Steph Curry in rhythm. And that was probably the right move to win that game against the Bulls. And it's probably the right move early. Had they had a longer training camp and a longer preseason and an appropriate ramp up to the year, maybe you could have implemented the style of offense that you wanted to play. You could have used this personnel in that style of offense. I still think that there's a version of this group that plays somewhere in between a classic high screen and roll, 1-5 pick and roll type team, and what it is that Steve Kerr likes to do with all the side-to-side ball movement stuff. There's room in that gray area between those two extremes. But right now, I don't think it's as simple as saying, do you want to play this way or do you want to play that way? Rather, I think what Steve Kerr has decided to do is, all right, let's dumb this thing down. Let's strip away this offense into its most simple version. We'll start there. And then you start to ascend the spectrum of, again, you're not going to get to basketball nirvana stuff from the dynasty. You're not going to get that with this group. You're just not. You don't have high IQ basketball players like Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston and those centers that were playmaking for those offenses. You don't have that group. You have better athletes, and so you need to use them and leverage those strengths to Mid-Level Exception's point here. But you'll start simple, and you'll start to scale up. You'll start to add more stuff. when Draymond Green comes back, you'll have a high-level playmaker there. And there's and what we're talking about essentially is finding the best shots for Steph. When we talk about the goals of Steve Kerr's offense, that's the ultimate goal. Get Steph going. You could do that in a high screen roll action. Maybe it's Draymond Green initiating the offense with, as the ball handler in the pick and roll. Maybe it's Andrew Wiggins doing that in the pick and roll. That's still maybe it's Steph Curry initially running a two man running a screen, giving the ball up to Draymond Green, who's setting the screen for him, and then he's relocating and doing all the stuff that Steph does so well. There's a way to get there. It just will look different, but eventually it'll still end up being Steph running around the arc, finding open shots. But they have to get to that point. And so I think they'll start with the basics like they did in Chicago, and then you start to scale up. That, to me, is the plan for Steve Kerr. More drive and kick stuff. But it's not as simple as – it doesn't have to be James Harden pick and roll with Clint Capella from a few years ago. That doesn't have to be the entire offense. That doesn't have to be the start and the end of the possession, right? You can drive, kick. If nothing's there, kick it out. That person drives and kicks. You're still getting the ball moving. You're still getting multiple touches per possession. And I think that's more of what we saw in Chicago than anything else.
If the season keeps going the way it's going, the Warriors might have to make a trade. We'll talk about that next. But first, if you're like me, when you get hungry, you can make bad decisions. But the best way to avoid blowing your diet is to be prepared. That's why I always have a box of Built Bars in the kitchen. Not only is this the best tasting protein bar I've ever had, it's the most healthy and it fills me up while I'm busy or I'm on the go. With 18 amazing flavors, including new flavors like caramel brownie, cookies and cream, and apple almond crisp, Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate and soft and easy to chew. They taste like a candy bar, but they're low calorie and low sugar, while also being high in protein and fiber, making them perfect for keto and other low carb diets. So go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off on your next order, plus a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning for a recap of tonight's game against the Pistons.
This question comes from at ULTD Warrior, who writes in, my question is simple. Will the Warriors make any moves? I don't know, man. Before the season, I predicted that they would trade one of Wiggins or Oubre. That was a bold prediction. It was not based on any reporting. It was just based on feel and circumstance. And look, if Oubre can't get going, maybe they do try to move him. I don't know what team would take Oubre. He's an expiring contract at $14 million a year or whatever. I don't know what team would take Kelly Oubre at this point. Maybe there's a team out there that thinks that they can use him better than Golden State has. Maybe by the trade deadline, he gets on a hot streak. Maybe he has a 10 games where he just gets going. Look, the law of averages, it's got to swing the other way at some point. I mean, there's going to be a time this season where Kelly Oubre gets hot. And we're and everybody's writing articles about how Kelly Oubre has figured things out. But that's just going to be the law of averages taking over. So maybe at some point, the Warriors will be able to trade him. Maybe at some point, they want to move Wiggins. Because, again, as comfortable as he looked in Chicago, that's been sort of the MO of Andrew Wiggins throughout his career. He's inconsistent. He needs to string together good games, not be on again, off again. Right? And so if the Warriors aren't all the way in on Wiggins, maybe they try to move him for a big man or something like that. I don't know. So I don't know if they'll make any moves. Maybe they might make a minor thing here. Maybe they give up on the Allen Smiley Geach experiment and try to create another roster spot that way. Maybe that, I think it could be anything like that to the boldest of predictions, which would be moving one of Wiggins or Oubre. And it's probably more likely Wiggins and Oubre at this point. But I think it would be hard for the Warriors to trade either of them at this juncture of the season. So will the Warriors make any moves? Maybe a small one. Maybe they use the disabled player exception around the trade deadline, but that's probably it. All right. We got a question here. What is it in the discussion? RJ Kaplan writes in, do you have recommendations for someone who wants to improve how to watch games? I often find I'm watching the wrong person or looking at a throw attempt and missing the foul that's occurring simultaneously, et cetera, et cetera. I'm relatively new with basketball. This is actually a good question. How do you watch a basketball game? Because it's really easy to just watch the ball and not really see what's going on. And this is something that I learned a few years ago. it's not easy. First of all, you can get distracted with all the player and coach interviews that are happening off to the side of the screen, all the sort of the broadcasting decorations and all and everything that's on the TV. So how do you watch a basketball game? It's you don't always watch who has the ball. I think you want to look for on each offensive possession. And look, it depends on what you're looking. Are you watching the offense or are you watching the defense? Let's start there. If you're a Warriors fan, then you're watching whichever one they're doing. If they're on offense, you're watching them initiate their offense. And if they're on defense, you're watching their coverages. So the first thing you want to do either way is look at the point of attack. Look at where the offense is initiated. I think you'll see there's always a first action to every offense. So just start there. If you're just starting off, just recognize, okay, was that a screen and roll? Did the big man pop after the screen? The guy that Steph Curry passed it to, did he come off of an off ball screen on the wing? Right. Those are the sort of things you want to see. You'll start to recognize patterns. You know, floppy action is a very common pattern in the NBA where you see a guard kind of go down to the baseline and curl back up to the 3-point line. You'll start to see that a lot more and you'll recognize, okay, hey, that guy is starting to curl. The ball is probably going to him. The Warriors like to use that kind of action and get into an elevator doors type set. That was more during their dynasty days than recently, but they've used it here and there even last season. So you'll start to recognize those basic actions and then what Steve Kerr likes to use with his own personal wrinkles to those actions. But again, on offense, just watch what the initial action is. Is somebody coming up to set a screen? Who most often is setting that screen for what player? And then in the case of Steph Curry, you want to watch what he does after giving up the ball after that initial action. And then you'll really be able to appreciate what it is that Steph does. Defensively, it's similar. How do they approach the ball handler on the opposing team? What are they doing at that point of attack? Are they going under a screen that is set? Are they going over the screen that is set? And that'll tell you a lot about what it is their strategy for the game is. So really good question. I actually enjoyed that one. All right. That'll do it for me today. Thanks to everybody who wrote in questions. Thanks to everybody, RJ, who submitted a question in the discussion part. We will do this once a week, probably the mail call episode. If you want to submit questions for the next episode, you could do so on Twitter at WC Goldberg or email them to me at WGoldberg@BayAreaNewsGroup.com or just set your alerts for our mail call episodes here on the Locker Room app and you can join in on the conversation every week. Thanks for listening.